museums have been one of the many institutions hit hard by the pandemic, but they've found a lot of ways to share their collections with the public even when they couldn't open their doors. And some of those changes may stick around even as they reopen. It's the latest innovation in a long history of museums dating back to ancient times. Our next guest is exploring the history of the museum from ancient history to today and how the purpose of the museum has evolved over time and could continue to evolve during the pandemic. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your favorite modern day museum and why? What's one of the most unique, maybe unusual museums you've ever been to? Do you have a favorite local museum? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Laura Lee Brott is a PhD candidate studying medieval art at UW-Madison. Her interests range from architecture and cultural landscapes to cartography. She's teaching a course this summer called The History of the Museum, from prehistory to COVID-19. Laura Lee, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
What do we know about, what we would consider to be the earliest museums?
Well, I think a lot of historians would argue that the first European museum came about in the time of the Renaissance, when we see the term museum first being used at around the 16th century, when world travel is sort of at a height and explorers are shipping back objects from places such as Mexico and the Yucatan Peninsula. And people in Europe are beginning to house these objects in cabinets called curio cabinets. In German, the term is Wunderkammer, a cabinet of curiosity. These objects inspired wonder in their European viewers because they were seeing things from lands and cultures that they couldn't even possibly imagine. Ritual objects from the Aztecs, for instance. And there's certainly a very dark history here about European expansion and colonization. But these objects were put into cabinets for either public or private viewing. And that's sort of where the museum space is born. And it takes off from there.
Well, hold on, though. Your class starts with prehistory. What kind of things could we regard as the, I guess, ancestors of that European version of the museum?
Yes, because the notion of a separate space for viewing objects or images, and I'm borrowing that clause from an article written by a contemporary art historian named Svetlana Alpers, in an article that I would recommend called The Museum as a Way of Seeing in a book called Exhibiting Cultures. But this idea of attentive viewing goes way back to cave paintings, maybe even Egyptian tombs. And in my class, we're going to look at medieval Christian churches that have with decorated altar spaces as the focal points for pilgrims, with altars that house precious objects called reliquaries, which house the bones of a saint or a piece of his or her cloth. And getting close to that object was a way to get closer to God. So I'm sort of wondering about all of these ideas of viewing through multiple layers of history. So one of the goals of my summer class, the history of the museum, is to turn the timeline back and use that methodology to widen our scope of what a museum space means or signifies, because as we know today, museums serve very distinct purposes.
It all points to this idea that as humans, we take certain things, certain objects, and say, this means something. If I can quote Close Encounters, it's worth keeping around and it's worth looking at. I don't know. What do you think about that? I don't know if it's an instinct or something we've learned over the millennia, but that core concept seems to lie behind all of these different things we might call museums.
That's a very potent idea about what makes an object worthy of display. It makes me think of this concept of the Universal Survey Museum, which the Louvre, our National Gallery in DC and in London, the Met in New York. There's this idea that for a Universal Survey Museum, that the goal is to present a sort of broad range of art history. But that's where the questions really come. What types of objects do we see are worthy of representing a time or a group of people? How are those choices problematic or enlightening?
We're talking to Laura Lee Brott. She's teaching a course this summer called The History of the Museum from Prehistory to COVID-19 this summer. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a museum fan? Do you have a favorite museum, big or small, you'd like to share with us? Do you work in a museum or volunteer in one yourself? Love to hear your story at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Laura Lee, you just mentioned some of the big names in the museum world, but I understand you're also a fan of smaller and more local museums. Can you tell us what you like about those and maybe share some of your favorites?
Yeah, sure. I spent some time along the Treasure Coast in South Florida. Somewhat recently, I was lucky enough to be able to go down there during all of this craziness. There was two massive royal shipwrecks about a mile or two off the coast, and the little treasure museums that are along the coast. It's Vero Beach and Sebastian are just marvelous because they have a sort of connection to their local history that you can't really get at if you're going to see a shipwreck item in one of those museums I just mentioned, while an amazing experience, surely. But there's something very distinct about viewing those objects 1,000 feet from where they were found. So those are near and dear to my heart at the moment, the Treasure Coast museums in South Florida. There's tons around here that I look forward to seeing. I heard about a mustard museum in I think Middleton. I've seen there's a really wonderful one in Viroqua. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Mm-hmm. Their local history museum is fantastic as well. So yeah.
We heard from Darlene on the Ideas Network Facebook page, who shared the New Orleans Pharmacy Museum called it small with a mighty impact and the reason to go to New Orleans. Also recommends the Arabia Steamboat Museum as a reason to visit Kansas City. So Darlene, clearly a fan of going to those local unique museums. And can you talk a little bit about that? Like those treasure museums, Laura Lee, this is a museum that doesn't say, we're going to cover everything, even in our local community. We're going to specialize in this one point of interest.
Right. Yeah. I think that the wonderful benefit about having a focused museum is that you can really interrogate one singular narrative and really give it all of the different angles that it might deserve. Because it's kind of making me think about this question of what makes a good museum. And a good museum is one that's open to change. So I think that at the local level, that's something that could be accomplished maybe easier. Thinking about just the actual operational staff at the museum. That's actually a big strength that I would say of a local institution.
We're picking up our conversation with Laura Lee Brott, PhD candidate studying medieval art at UW-Madison. She's teaching a course this summer called The History of the Museum from Prehistory to COVID-19. We're talking about museums, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a museum fan, tell us what you like about them, the kind of things you like to see. Do you have a favorite local one? How has COVID changed everything? Call 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Nancy is with us in Milwaukee. Nancy, hi.
Hello. I have been in many European museums. My specialties there would be the Pitti Palace in Florence and the Uffizi in Florence. The Pitti because of the magnificent Fulvii type of painting. But I have not really traveled much in the United States, and I'm age now 89, and I may not make it, but the museum I would really like to see in America is the Mutter Museum, which I believe is in Philadelphia, and it has to do with everything concerning man, the very essence of man from the first embryo to a series of fetuses right up until the time of birth, and many other abnormalities that people have died from and suffered from. There's something magnificent to me about a museum featuring on man and not thinking about going to Mars. The Mutter Museum is really high on my list.
Interesting. Thank you so much, Nancy. I just looked it up. It's the Mutter Museum. It's like Mutter, but with a umlaut over the U's, and it's a museum of the College of Physicians in Philadelphia. Interesting. I wasn't familiar with that, Laura Lee, but that as an organizing principle for a museum, what do you think?
I love this museum so much. And it brings up a really good point about the fact that museums aren't just houses for art, but they're really educational institutions. So it's so fantastic to think about. It's a wonderful thing to think about these institutions existing because they serve such an important role, which is to educate us on how material objects, whether they're art or not, I mean, vestiges of human exploration can be used to navigate medical subjects. For somebody like me, I mean, my mom's a nurse, but I have trouble with biology. So it's really helpful to see the objects that physicians are using and the settings that they're in to understand those subjects. So I really appreciate that comment and that call.
Nancy, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Trevor next in Appleton. Trevor, hi.
Hey, Rob and Laura, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring here for you guys. It's a globally renowned museum in Two Rivers, Wisconsin, called Hamilton Woodtype and Printing Museum.
Wow.
It has garnered the interest of national software company Adobe, where they've actually Adobe has gone in and actually hand scanned some of the wood type and made it available in the open source platform through Adobe's typeface library. So it's amazing just collection, and they've got amazing community outreach, but not as much recognition as, you know, you might think it should have in fine arts universities like, you know, School of the Art Institute of Chicago or Pratt or things like that. But I would highly, highly recommend your students to take a trip out to Two Rivers during this course, Laura, and see this museum. It's absolutely amazing. It's breathtaking. The fine art is world class.
Trevor, thanks a lot for the call. And I got to admit, my brother is a printer, and he's done talks there. My wife and kids have been there. My folks have been there. I still haven't been there myself, Trevor. So thanks for the nudge. I do appreciate it. Laura Lee, field trip.
Yeah, I really hope that's possible. That's one of the things. My class is actually online, so there's a little bit of a paradox there. But it's timely because of the setting that we're in right now with everything being online. But I cannot wait to step foot in that museum, whether it's with students or just myself. That looks fantastic.
And that also makes me think of the museum as a place that highlights more recent, you know, industrial era technology and things like that. I mean, there's Hamilton, there's science and industry in Chicago, Henry Ford in Dearborn, Michigan, the things that tell the story of, you know, the last couple few hundred years and technological development. There's quite a few of them, I guess, right?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, any historical or contemporary subject can be materialized and visualized. That is for sure. You can fill a house with objects related to any subject or issue. I would argue that as an art historian, for sure.
Thanks for the call, Trevor. Kate joins us also in Appleton. Kate, hello.
Hi. I am an educator in the Appleton area. And before I decided to go into teaching, I thought I was going to be going into education in an art museum. So I have had a lot of different experience. I have to say that Wisconsin has a plethora of really good interactive museums. I know in Milwaukee, they have other hands-on ones. In the area that I live and where I grew up in Sheboygan, they have the John Michael Kohler Art Center, which has like really nice tours. They have artisan residence programs. And really, if you have any sort of interest, there is probably some sort of internship out there that you would be able to do. I've also worked at the Payne Art Center and Gardens. So even if you like to be more outside, there's lots of other interactive things as well as field trips. So like, basically, if you can think of it, there's a museum that's going to be out there for you. And that's what I love about museums and how education pairs so well with them.
Fantastic. Kate, thank you so much for sharing this. And Laura Lee, she mentioned the word interactive a couple times, and it seems like since I was a kid, you know, you'd go to a museum, there's a thing on a wall and maybe a little note by it, and that's your interactive. You lean in and read the note. Museums have gone a long way to make things more interactive and educational, at least in my personal experience, Adam. Is that something that's actually going on?
Yeah, and I think that that's probably, too, a result of the different medias that were offered. At my master's institution at University of North Texas, there's a new media program there, which, electronics. I remember walking up a set of stairs and different notes on a piano were playing. And it's just it's really a response to the different types of materials that artists are now being inspired by and working with, and then museums as spaces to respond to the types of needs that these objects require, like a set of stairs.
Kate, thank you so much for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking to Laura Lee Brott. She's teaching a course at UW-Madison this summer called The History of the Museum. Laura Lee, before we go back to our callers, COVID-19 obviously changed a lot of institutions, including museums. What kind of changes did you see there? Are there things you think might stick around?
So I feel like there was one big collective breath in when it all started. How are we going to move forward? In a weird way, our technology was ready for us to live digitally. And museums have sort of just taken that on. I mean, during the pandemic, many of us have sort of looked inward, and museums as institutions have done the same. I was actually in a workshop yesterday with the National Gallery, hearing from conservators who are diving into their artifacts to the microscopic level using remote sensing technologies and just unearthing as much information as they can using these digital technologies to then be able to show to our audiences. So we have this sort of entering now the sort of superhuman awareness of our art objects that are available online, which is a very distinct experience rather than seeing it in person. So I think that as we maybe can release our breath, we can start to, I think we'll begin to see how the two will come together. It's pretty exciting.
Let's go back to our callers now. John is with us in Heartland. John, hi.
Hi. I was just traveling today out in southwest Wisconsin, and I heard Barocco, one of my favorite towns, being mentioned, and I thought of Potosi, the Potosi Beer Museum and Brewery. That was actually a nonprofit brewery. It was actually funded by the state of Wisconsin, and I believe the Department of Tourism, and set of buildings that were really run down, and a local artist, I believe, donated a good chunk of the acreage that he owned to form this nonprofit, and it has revived the town and is really a fun place to go if you're into the history of the brewers, not just throughout Wisconsin, but through different areas. I believe they're a pretty big walkthrough brewery, and actually the artist was a woodworker and made a lot of the things throughout the brewery that are like the bar. There's a bar and restaurant attached, and there's other artisans that are around the brewery now too. It's a wonderful place for a day trip.
Sounds That's great. Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Yeah, Laura Lee, go ahead.
Oh, I love the idea of museums sort of being in different types of environments, such as a brewery, where you can actually experience the beer that's being made and then think about the historical context in which the setting that you're in and how it was made too. So I think that's really cool.
Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. We'll go to Judith next in Burlington. Judith, hello.
Hi, I'm calling you from two small offbeat museums in downtown Burlington, the Spinning Top and Yo-Yo Museum and the Logic Puzzle Museum. They're separate museums, but they're both hands-on, and it turns out that adults like them as much as the kids.
Wow, and do you get to do logic puzzles in the one and play with, fail to play with yo-yos in the other?
Well, the Logic Puzzle Museum, yes, there's 60 hands-on brain teaser puzzles to use and an exhibit, of course, in a collection. The Spinning Top and Yo-Yo Museum has hands-on tops. We don't have hands-on yo-yos, but we have lots of yo-yos in the exhibit. So there's lots of fun, and there's a show and hands-on and exhibit and ice by hunt. It's a whole program and tour when you come to the top museum.
I love it, Judith. Thanks a lot for sharing this. Pretty specific here, Laura Lee, but a fun theme for both of them.
I love it so much. That's the best interactive museum I've ever heard of.
That sounds like a great time. Time for one more caller, I think. Patrick is with us in Eau Claire. Patrick, hi.
Hi, this is Patrick from Eau Claire. I would like to recommend the National Musical Instrument Museum in Vermilion, South Dakota. They have thousands of musical instruments. They can only display a handful of their collection. You need to set aside a couple of days if you're going to go see it, if you want to see everything. And I was there a few years ago, but I believe they've expanded it now, so it's even bigger than it was. So you may need more than a couple of days. You'll need at least 2 days to see if you want to see everything. They got music instruments all over the world. They got famous instruments owned by like Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley. Mm-hmm. There's a whole section about guitars. Whatever your musical interest is, you'll find it at the National Music Instrument Museum in Vermilion, South Dakota.
Patrick, thanks a lot for the call. Laura Lee, just under a minute left. I don't know, how do you curate your class given all the museums out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going by topic, actually, and I'm also opening it up to the students so they can sort of pick and choose sort of like today, you know, what's your favorite or what's your, you know, something that really inspires you. So yeah, it's really topic-based. At the end of the class, I'll be bringing in an artist as sort of one of my conclusion lectures, because that's sort of where we're at today in terms of, you know, what are museums showing and who are the people that need them.
Laura Lee, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Laura Lee Brott, PhD candidate in medieval art at UW-Madison. We talked to her about her course she's teaching this summer, The History of the Museum, from Prehistory to COVID-19. Keep sharing your favorites on the Ideas Network Facebook page.